dig this 2023 baseball season. There's a lot going on. A lot of storylines and surprises that were unexpected based on what happened in spring training and the early stages of the season. Even going back to the stage set by last year's postseason with the Phillies, for instance. The Braves and the Mets bowing out early, but both with 101 wins. The Padres last season getting to the NLCS, and what a flop they have been. The Astros, who don't bother to make a real push for Justin Verlander, they allow him to go to the Mets where he makes, I don't know, three starts and spends 10 minutes before he turns around and goes back to the Astros. Crazy stuff. So I really dig all the ups and downs and ins and outs, the dramatic twists and turns of this baseball season. And yeah, both of the teams out of New York with very high expectations have reached the month of August in unenviable positions. Is it done? Are they done? Well, not necessarily, but there's not a lot of positive zen around either the Mets or the Yankees, that's for sure. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It's always World Series or bust for the Yankees, and that's not really on the radar right now. Though, if you make the tournament, you get in, you can maybe have a run like the Phillies did last year or the Nationals did in winning the 2019 World Series. Maybe even the Padres, who had a late push at the end of 22. So there are certainly ways and teams that have set precedent for just getting in. Could that be the Yankees this year? Well, if it is, they'll have to do it without Domingo Germán, who is on the IL, or not really the IL, but he's out for the rest of the year. He's unavailable because he has entered treatment for alcohol abuse.
I just know, you know, he's going into treatment, so I just, I mean, want the best for the person that's going through a difficult time. It is very sad for, you know, someone that's very talented. And so I think that's the biggest thing, my takeaway of all of it. And just, you know, hope and pray that he gets the right kind of help that, you know, truly gets him going in the right direction for the rest of his life.
The reaction of Yankees manager Aaron Boone on Domingo Germán being out the rest of the way. They do get a victory over the Rays in the Bronx, and Pete Caldera was there to cover it. Longtime Yankees reporter and writer for the Bergen Record and the USA Today Network, and we're pleased to welcome him to the show now for the first time. Pete, before we talk specifically about Domingo Germán, what are a few words you would use to describe, say, the last couple weeks for the Yankees?
One is predictable, because, you know, they've been the same lazy offense and, you know, just, you know, kind of remained in that malaise they've been in. You know, it's been hard to score runs, you know, with this team. And obviously, you know, not having Aaron Judge in their lineup, you know, was had affected them greatly. And since he's been back, you know, you can't anticipate that, you know, he's going to be, you know, just the one element that is going to turn things around. You know, they've had a lineup of, you know, highly paid veteran, you know, position players that have performed way under expectations this year. And Stanton, LeMahieu, and Rizzo have been, you know, the biggest of those underachievers. And that has made, you know, scoring runs a nightly struggle for this team.
The Domingo Germán news, especially when it's not been that long since he threw his perfect game, probably sent shockwaves around Major League Baseball. What's your reaction to that news that he's going to be away from the team the rest of the year while he deals with treatment?
Yeah, I mean, first, you know, your emotions and your thoughts go towards, you know, him coming out of this a better person and for himself and his health and his family. And you know, that's number one. His career, you know, has been, you know, dotted with inconsistencies on the mound and some troubles off the field, too. You know, this is a player that had a domestic violence issue that he was suspended 81 games for in 2019. he will not pitch again for the rest of this year. And you know, there's a pretty good chance, or at least there's a chance, he's thrown his last pitch as a Yankee. They still have a year of control with him next year, but you don't know if this incident has, you know, will lead to them severing ties with him, or they give him another chance, or what it looks like, you know, come spring training next year. But I think first and foremost, you know, it's his teammates and certainly manager Aaron Boone and general manager, you know, Brian Cashman were concerned enough for the player that, you know, they knew he had to go into some kind of a treatment program. But, you know, if this is the last pitch he's thrown for the Yankees, you know, you look at the broader picture is a very talented pitcher that really never put it together consistently. You know, he had a 5-something ERA after he threw the perfect game. And, you know, I think a lot of us were kind of thinking that, you know, maybe that this is the jumping off point where he could, you know, kind of harness, you know, all that the talent he has. He certainly is capable. He showed it, and he has showed it in the past, but, you know, just could never put it together over a season. Injuries had something to do with that, too. And now you wonder about his career going forward now.
Gerrit Cole started and pitched tonight, and they get a win over the Rays, but they've got some ground to make up. So what does this mean for their rotation?
Well, they're getting Nestor Cortes back a little earlier than they expected. He'll pitch Saturday against the Houston Astros. Friday, Luis Severino, who's, you know, you talk about wildly inconsistent. I mean, he's just been, you know, he just hasn't found it. In fact, he's looked lost and has it pretty much admitted so after his last start in Baltimore. You know, there was a chance that he could have come out of the rotation, maybe even skipped the start, go to the bullpen. You know, the state of the Yankees rotation is now that, you know, someone was, if Herman was still in this mix, someone was probably going to come out of the starting five rotation when Cortes got back from his strained rotator cuff. But now he's back. Herman is obviously out, and Severino is keeping his turn against Houston. And then there's going to be a lot of attention, you know, paid to that start. I mean, that's a tough lineup to have to turn things around with. He says he's healthy. The velocity shows that, you know, the fastball's there. It's just that his pitch mix and his command and probably his confidence has taken a huge hit here in these 11 or 12 starts he's made for the Yankees in 23. So it's going to be another, you know, attention getter, big start for Severino here against Houston.
Pete Caldera is with us on After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio, covers the Yankees for the Bergen Record and the USA Today Network. Just before we move on to more about the Yankees, you mentioned the Astros. They've been the nemesis for the Yanks a few times in this last couple of playoff appearances. What's your reaction to them getting Justin Verlander back at the trade deadline?
Yeah, right back into the New York scene right away this weekend. Yeah, that's going to be something. Obviously, a lot of teams made some big splashes at the trade deadline, and the Yankees were not one of them. But you know, this was one of the few, you know, trade deadline periods, you know, you can remember that the Yankees weren't actively shopping starting pitching. I mean, their needs were, you know, left field, left-handed hitting, outfielder preferably. You know, Cody Bellinger would have fit that to a T, and then the Cubs obviously took him off the market the way they've been playing lately. And, you know, they could have used a third baseman, a catcher. They were looking for some relief help, and they did get a reliever, Middleton, from the Chicago White Sox. But, you know, was anything, you know, other than a, you know, maybe a Soto or a Bellinger, you know, going to move the needle for the 2023 Yankees? Probably not. Say a Tommy Pham, you know, certainly could have upgraded the Yankees in the outfield, but, you know, they chose to hang on to their prospects or whatever the price point would have been for the Yankees to get a rental player and just fight with the guys that they have. But, yeah, I mean, just to spin it back to Verlander, it's going to be really interesting just to see, you know what he says about coming back to New York and and to be in a town like this where you have the, you know, what, two of the three highest payroll teams or the top two payroll teams in baseball. One just decided to you know, fold up the tent, and the other one, the Yankees, are going to struggle mightily to get just a piece of a wild card here. So you know, what a turn of events it's been in New York for the last 4 months.
No doubt. And I know it doesn't help to say that the Yankees would be first place in the AL Central, even though they're the basement of the AL East. But when you look at this team and see where they are now, early August, what signs of life do you see, or what signs of hope for them to actually make a run to a wild card?
You know, if you want to look at the most optimistic part of the Yankees, is that if their pitching stays healthy now, I mean, they still have a full complement of a five-man rotation that you can send to war and feel good about if they're operating at their norms. And, you know, you start with Gerrit Cole, but they desperately need, you know, Carlos Rodon, you know, after five starts, is, you know, coming off the IL, long IL stint. First with the forearm and then a back issue. We have not seen, you know, the Carlos Rodon that, you know, that was commanding $162 million six-year contract in free agency to come to the Bronx. You know, Severino, we talked about, you know, this is at his best as a frontline starter who is, you know, pitching like a guy who's, you know, struggling to stay in a rotation, frankly. You know, getting Nestor Cortes back should help. And he was an all-star last year, but, you know, he struggled this year and probably, you know, pitched with at a bit of a handicap coming out of spring training because he had a groin issue that he kind of tried to pitch his way through, and it might have impacted his mechanics and his command in the first half, and then he winds up on the IL with a shoulder issue. So, but getting him back in the rotation, if he gives you anything close to what he gave you last year, you got to feel good about that. And their bullpen's been terrific. You trust that you know, if you get a lead late, you'll be able to hold it. It's just the scoring has been a spectacular struggle for this team. And then you know, you just have to hope in these last 2 months that, you know, that these guys either get hot or just frankly, you know, play to their norms. Even Rizzo admitted, you know, the other night in a fit of frustration that if he was just hitting a little bit, you know, how much it would help this club. You know, you watch, you know, a Gerrit Cole lose a 1-0 game in Baltimore. And this is the kind of stuff that's led to them being in the position they are. You know, they haven't had a real leadoff hitter all year. And, you know, the middle of their order, certainly without Judge for a spell, but, you know, with LeMahieu and Rizzo and Stanton not performing up to standards, I mean, that has had a devastating effect on this lineup.
Pete Caldera is with us talking Yankees here on After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Do Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman survive this if the Yankees don't make the postseason, in your opinion?
If we're going down the same route where there's not another catastrophic injury to a guy like Judge or pitching staff, and they don't make postseason, this could be the year where a manager or a GM you know, pays for their job. Or let's go back a bit. Hal Steinbrenner has basically had control of this team since 2010. He is not George Steinbrenner, his father.
Right.
He's had a very good working relationship with Cashman. This is the only, you know, baseball ops head that he has known or dealt with on a daily basis for over a decade. And he's grown to trust him implicitly and his opinions and the baseball lieutenants that Cashman surrounds himself with. So, you know, does that relationship change with a failed playoff year with the payroll they have and you know what they did to spend for Judge and Rodon and Rizzo last offseason? Hard to say. I would still think that that relationship is pretty rock solid. And then you go to the manager. You know, in the past, when the Yankees have changed managers, and they change managers infrequently in the Cashman era, those have been decisions that have been made by Cashman and taken to ownership and for approval. And it happened with Joe Torre, and it happened with Joe Girardi. Does it happen with Aaron Boone? Possibly. But it hasn't happened yet. And they have had championship caliber rosters that have not made it past the American League Championship Series or have suffered worse fates than not even getting to the ALCS. So, hard to say, but I would think though that the possibility of managing change, if this stays the way it is greater now than it probably in any other year with Boone at the helm, because of look, it's New York, and you know, maybe 6 years and this is the tipping point here, but right. Yeah, it's not trending in the right direction, put it that way.
Gotcha. Pete, before I let you go, it's clear that the AL East is the best division in baseball. Every team is above 500. The Orioles and the Rays right now are sitting on 66 wins apiece. The Blue Jays have 60, and they're 6.5 games back of the O's in the division. It's crazy how good this division is. So, of course, that matters when we're talking about the Yankees, because they are still a club above 500. What do you think of the Orioles and the Rays at the top right now?
Certainly have a lot of talent and staying power, and all those teams that you mentioned helped themselves at the deadline. You know, even the Orioles, who didn't make any real dramatic moves in the offseason, coming off a surprising year when they, got into contention, now have positioned themselves to where, you like their chances against Tampa Bay and Toronto and to some extent, obviously, the Yankees and the Red Sox. You look at Toronto's team, though, top to bottom, the talent on that roster is superior. And but you wonder, they haven't fired off, wins at the rate of their talent in this year and in past years. I mean, they struggled a bit in the first half. Started playing better of late, and you wonder if they've got a run in them to where, their talent alone could sustain them and push them to an AL East championship, or at least a long run after securing a wild card. So I gotta like all their chances, and the Red Sox have been surprising too to be in it when we all, as a consensus, thought that this was going to be an automatic last place team and are still in a really good division. But this division has, with the one exception being the Yankees, has kind of outperformed maybe their own expectations to this point. It's going to be an interesting run at the end. We have a different schedule now. I mean, we're not you're not playing three. Six series, three home, three away within your division this year with the new scheduling format. It's just a 2-2. So, you're not going to have more of these head-to-head games within the division that, might be a lot more interesting down the stretch. I look at the Yankee schedule. I mean, they finished the year in Kansas City, just interesting enough. I mean, if they needed a game to get into the postseason or something, they'll be playing their last three games of the year in Kansas City and not at Toronto or Boston or Tampa Bay, where it could be a little more dramatic. But we're all going to watch with interest, because I mean, these teams are loaded, they're talented, and especially with the in the case of the Rays and the Orioles, to be doing it with two of the lowest payrolls in the game is a real testament to those two franchises and their front offices.
Never a dull moment. So you can follow Pete Caldera on Twitter at @PCaldera, CALDERA. Covers this team now for 20 years. Bergen Record, USA Today Network baseball writer. It's good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for your insight in a couple of minutes, Pete.
Anytime, Amy. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Still up in the air for Aaron Boone, according to Pete. And he's really just taking the temperature of the room. Nobody knows what Mr. Steinbrenner will do. Sounds like Brian Cashman is someone he trusts. And he has put together a lineup that could win, but they're underperforming. Underperforming in a real noticeable way, a way that even the players themselves have gotten frustrated about. And yet they do have a lot of money wrapped up in those players. Had to pay Aaron Judge, tried to put guys around him that would work. It did not. Has not. And all is not lost. But as I said before we started talking to Pete, for the Yankees, for the family that owns them, for the general manager, the front office, the fans certainly, It's usually Super Bowl. It's usually World Series or bust. Now, they haven't had one in quite a while, so the drought extends on. Maybe those expectations are unrealistic now for the Yankees moving forward. But it is fairly dramatic, the amount of money spent on baseball in New York, only to see two teams that are, at least at this point, out of the playoffs looking in. And one, of course, holding a fire sale. Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, addressing the comments from Max Scherzer about what 2024 will look like. So remember, Mad Max said both the owner and the general manager of the Mets told him they weren't planning to compete in 2024. So Steve Cohen, standing in front of reporters and answering questions on Wednesday about the fire sale by the Mets. And then we're gonna strap on the pads and hit somebody. Actually, they're barely hitting each other in practice, even though they are wearing pads now. But we're on the eve of the first preseason game of this 2023 NFL campaign. So we've got a bunch of QB news et al. To share with you. I love that sound. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. On our Facebook page, too, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I said, okay, yeah, that's a brand news to me. Different than what I'd ever heard out of Steve's mouth. I was like, all right, I got to hear this directly from Steve. So I had a phone call with Steve, and he basically articulated the same vantage point, that that was a new vision for the Mets. That was a new timeline that they were identifying, and that players that were under contract for next year, that they could be potentially sold off at the deadline right now.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Max Scherzer kind of took the top off the Mets strategy and sent a few ripple effects for teams, not just around the Mets, players around the Mets, but also other teams in Major League Baseball. And I kind of wonder if baseball itself will investigate these comments from Steve Cohen and then Billy Epler, the general manager, about the Mets fielding a competitive team or not in 2024. So it was Steve Cohen's turn to respond or to talk about their future plans on Wednesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Now, Steve is a multi-billionaire and made it very clear when he was talking with reporters on Wednesday that he can do whatever he wants with the roster. So no one is going to tell him what to do. He said, I own the ball club, so I can do whatever I want. But what does it mean then to compete or not next season?
I think the expectations were really high this year, and my guess is next year will be a lot lower. But I can't speak to what's going to happen in the off season. I mean, there may be opportunity. I'm opportunistic. Okay. I mean, I don't want to roll a team out there that we're going to be embarrassed by. But saying But we also know that, spending a fortune, everyone says I spent a lot of money, and other teams did too, doesn't guarantee you a trip to the playoffs. And so I think we got to, look and see what we need. Obviously, we're going to need starting pitching.
Obviously, since you just traded away both Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. Yes, and obviously, we'll need starting pitching after not re-signing Jacob deGrom. The whole thing is fascinating. And I don't know what would have happened with DeGrom had he stayed in New York. I don't know that. There's no way of knowing if he has the same injury, if he'd be on the IL, if he'd be out for the season. There's no way of knowing that. It could have gone the same exact way, or it could have gone differently. You can't go back and change one piece of history and then expect that everything else remains exactly the same. But it does beg the question, if you pay Jacob deGrom instead of Justin Verlander, could they be in a different situation? Maybe not, because certainly deGrom's price with the Rangers was beyond what Cohen was willing to pay for him, not beyond what he was willing to pay for Verlander, at least in terms of the average annual value, not necessarily the number of years for a 40-year-old starter. But yeah, it's kind of twisty. They don't pay DeGrom. They pay Verlander. Already had Max Scherzer on the staff, and now both of them are gone, as is DeGrom. Huh. So whether they compete in 2024 remains to be seen, but he definitely is indicating he doesn't want to have a roster that is a flop or that sends the message to the fans that they don't need to show up at the ballpark at all next year. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Really disappointing for Liam Hendricks, not about Liam Hendricks, but disappointing for him that after returning from his non-Hodgkin lymphoma and being cleared to pitch for the Chicago White Sox, there's been some really emotional moments for him, obviously. To get him back on the field was awesome after he was cleared and his cancer is in remission, but now needs Tommy John surgery. Oh, what a double whammy. Former manager and, of course, big leaguer himself, Ozzie Guillen, was talking about this on NBC White Sox.
This guy, he beat cancer. He can beat anything. He might come back from Tommy John surgery in mid of June, July.
Yeah.
It's so unpredictable. But it seemed like one on the top of another one and another one. It's like it's rolling and rolling and rolling.
Right.
But I think the good thing about this man, it showed people how strong mentally he is, how important for him, his family around him. He will be back, but it's going to be a last year contract for them with the White Sox. They might make him, White Sox did it to me. When I got hurt, and I don't have a contract, and the first thing in the morning, Jerry Randall come to my wife, and he say, don't tell Ozzy, don't worry about his contract next year. If he can play or not, we go to sign him for this amount of money.
Okay, first of all, we'll get to what Ozzy said on NBC Sports Chicago, or NBC Sports White Sox. But I'm looking it up because I couldn't remember what was his last year in the majors. 2000. Wow, it's really been 23 years. Do you remember? Well, then he managed too. There was never a dull moment around Ozzy. He was so fascinating. That's true. There still isn't. But yeah, he was last with the White Sox in 97. 97. That's a long time
ago. Sounds about right. Yeah.
My goodness. Anyway, sad for Liam Hendricks, but he definitely has shown that he can beat the odds. He's got a good support system around him. And we'll see if Ozzy's right. Will the Sox take care of him or will they move on? He represents a lot of hope and inspiration for a lot of people. So maybe they will keep him. But gosh, talk about being in no man's land. That team is a disaster this year again, too. But it's tough to hear. Tough to hear for Liam. He's already been through so much. Hi, yeah. Marco.
Hi.
Feel free to weigh in. I know you love baseball.
I was thinking of the fact the White Sox have been one of the biggest disappointments. You mentioned the Mets. They're obviously the most. I really thought the White Sox were going to have a bounce back year. I'm stunned at how bad it was how much that they obviously, pulled the plug and had to retool this thing. I really thought that they were on the right projection, and I thought once the Tony La Russa, whatever that was, mix was taken away, I thought that it would find its way, and it's been a lot worse than I ever expected.
This sucks, though. Of all the people in Major League Baseball for this to happen to, it really does stink. He's got the torn UCL in his right elbow, and we're talking another 12 months. I mean, he wasn't out that long for the treatment for non-Hodgkin lymphoma, but...
Yeah, I mean, you're possibly looking at all of next year.
Right.
In 12 to 14, you could be looking at... Yeah, and that was the other aspect of it. It's 34, I was going to say 35. So, yeah, I mean, it's just the timing of it, with everything else that's going on in his life, put that aside, just the timing of it from a baseball standpoint, 34, 35 in August.
Right.
It's brutal because not only is it this year, it's likely, if not all of, basically all of next year. Then you're looking at a guy who hasn't pitched in a couple of years coming back at 36-ish.
Well,
that's
tough. He did pitch. So he pitched in the spring, right?
Right.
About mid-May or so.
Right.
Had a couple of appearances, got his first save, got a couple of wins, really emotional, but hasn't pitched since early June.
Right.
So now has the surgery, and as you say, 12 to 14 months, and we're looking at the very least probably All-Star break of next year, depending upon what the White Sox do. If he decides he wants to return, I mean, a lot of guys see a bump or a boost from a strengthened UCL after the Tommy John surgery, and they continue to pitch. I mean, Verlander is a great example of that.
Tommy John is not something where you have that and then your career is over. No. They've done tremendous strides, and you could get a bump in velocity and everything else, but just because you could be back in 12 to 14 months, usually it's the year after.
Right.
That's when you start to see the guys really start to pick up their career again, and they can get back to form. But that's my point, though. Now you're talking about roughly a year and a half to possibly 2 years without really pitching, and now you're trying to get back to form, and you're 36, 37. Mm-hmm. That's where it's rough. Yeah. It's the timing of it in where he is in his career. You have this, it seems like every other pitcher has it at 24, 25, 20. It seems like every guy, it's just a question of when did you have your Tommy John surgery, not if, and did you have one or two? It's not that. It's you're getting into the late 30s, and the timing of it, it's not in the spring, so you lose 1 year. It's in August, so you lose basically all of this season and maybe all of next season. God. That's the tough part.
Yeah, it definitely is. But you're right. It seems like more and more pitchers have it now.
Oh, yeah.
It's considered, again, a surgery that you can recover from that in some cases makes you stronger and extends your life as a starter specifically.
Yeah.
And so it's not, I mean, think about Verlander and late he was. He was, what, 39, 38 when he had the surgery?
Somewhere in 37, 38.
And then wins a Cy Young after that. Now, he's an extraordinary example.
Right.
But it's not impossible. But, it's become more and more common for pitchers.
Shoulder, different story. When you start getting into labrums and whatnot, then they're still confused. They still don't know all the... Tommy John, they have figured it out. I don't want to say perfected, but it's close. They know what they're doing, and they're quick to be able to go in, identify, and fix. So this is something where he can definitely get fixed. Like I said, it's the timing of it and the age where it just becomes more and more difficult to be able to come back that road. You can do it. It's just a lot harder.
Mm. All right, coming up, we're going to pivot to football. Joe Mixon explains why he took a pay cut to return to the Cincinnati Bengals. And considering what's happening with the running backs right now in the NFL, that was probably the smartest move that any of the backs made this offseason. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, and then our Facebook page, our YouTube channel as well.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Burrow takes the snap, hands it to Mixon. Knights inside for the first down. Keeps fighting toward the end zone. It's a touchdown! Joe Mixon takes it in.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That makes me miss actual football. We're about to get some fake football on Thursday night with the first preseason game. The 2023 campaign.
Bam! Bam! Bam!
Unfortunately, we will not hear Bengals radio. Instead, we will get Jets and Browns. So you'll hear from their quarterbacks, or about their quarterbacks, coming up in what will be the AFC edition of QB News, and then we'll have an NFC edition of QB News. As a side note, it's the time of the year where I call the AFC the AL. And where I call the NL East the NFC East.
Better than like Western Conference.
That's true, because we're now about to see football step back into the center ring of the circus. Now, I told Bob actually on Wednesday evening that giving preseason or training camp or spring training scores, it's against my religion. The games, the final results do not matter. Most of us will watch a few minutes and then we're peace out. So the scores don't matter. What matters is getting your guys ready to play. What matters is being in shape. Certainly what matters is getting through it without any major injuries. Now, teams are obviously dealing with that now, navigating injuries, losing players. It's all part of it. But we will have a Thursday preseason game, the Hall of Fame game. It's on NBC, so it'll look and sound like it'll be dressed up like actual football. Can't imagine that we get more tops than a handful of snaps from starters. But Aaron Rodgers will be on the sidelines in green and not, actually, that's not so different, but not Packers green. It'll be Jets green, the Cleveland Browns. Again, who knows if we'll see any of their projected starters. But for a couple of minutes there, it'll look and sound like football. Hut, hut, and then it'll be back to, oh, please, can we get to opening kick? It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Browns play in the division with the Cincinnati Bengals. And I thought it was really interesting to hear from their top running back, Joe Mixon, because he took a pay cut to stay in Bengals orange. Why does that matter? Well, not only does it matter because he's got a comfort zone there with the Bengals and because they will rely on him, but it also matters because there are a number of very good running backs who are still without jobs. And here we are a couple of weeks into training camp, and you've got guys like Dalvin Cook and Ezekiel Elliott, Kareem Hunt, also from most recently from the AFC North. They're without jobs. Joe Mixon didn't want to go that route, and that's smart now. He agreed to take a pay cut because he felt, and this is his word, a sacrifice was necessary to keep this team on the trajectory, she said. Oh my goodness, sometimes talking is hard. To keep the Bengals on the trajectory toward a Super Bowl. So he restructured his four-year deal. Remember, he signed that in the COVID year, 2020. And his new contract is actually a $3 million decrease from what he was supposed to make in 22. And that's not chump change. Not for running backs, obviously. The last we knew, the Vikings had a $7 million contract on the table for Dalvin Cook. I guess it's debatable who's more valuable to his team, Dalvin Cook with the Vikings or Joe Mixon with the Bengals. But either way, most running backs don't make double figures. And if they do, it's 1 or 2 years of their careers. Mixon said it was the bigger picture that allowed him and his ego to take a rework deal, a rework contract that reduces his cash payout by $3 million. And so the Bengals had kind of gone back and forth. They weren't sure what was going to happen with Joe Mixon, but he decided that he would go ahead and take a pay cut because he wanted to stay put. And he tells WCPO Channel 9 his only focus is championship bling.
It's definitely a blessing to still, you know, be here and be in this building, man. So obviously the main goal is the main goal, and that's the Super Bowl. But same time, it's a long season. Got to take one game at a time. And, you know, may the best teams be there.
Hadn't heard anything from Joe Mixon until training camp, and he's not going to be made available to reporters on a larger scale until the start of the regular season. And that actually is a violation of the NFL's media policy. So we'll see whether or not he ends up having to pay fines or if the Bengals end up having to pay fines on his behalf. I suspect that one major reason is because he's got a trial that's supposed to start August 14th. Yeah, coming up in a couple of weeks. Remember, he got charged with misdemeanor aggravated menacing. So he was accused of pointing a gun at a woman in a road rage incident. And he pleaded not guilty to it. And Jay just confirmed to that. Thank you. The trial is set to start August 14th. So we're talking about a couple of weeks now. So I suspect that is why the Bengals are not making him available during training camp, though he did this one-on-one with WCPO Channel 9. So I guess there could be a situation where he actually doesn't end up playing the season, or maybe doesn't end up playing the entire season. While we're talking running backs, Alvin Kamara was meeting with Roger Goodell in New York on Wednesday because he's got a possible suspension on the horizon. You remember that there was video of a fight outside a Vegas nightclub going back last year, and he played, well, he was eligible to play all of last year. And so now the Saints with Dennis Allen, they're waiting to hear what happens and whether or not the commissioner and the NFL will suspend Kamara. So he is supposed to be back with the team for training camp. The Saints, though, will have to wait on that ruling from the commissioner's office. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Kamara reached a plea agreement in his case to kind of settle it. He's no longer facing a felony charge, but still, there's video out there that indicates that he was part of this skirmish with a man outside an elevator. And the NFL is not beholden to charges. Remember that about the NFL's behavioral policy, of which, you know, Roger Goodell designed it and he still has final say. Players do not have to be charged with a crime, convicted of a crime. They don't have to serve time for a crime. The commissioner and his office do have the ability to suspend or levy punishment to a player under their behavioral policy, even if he's not guilty or never faces charges at all. And we've seen that precedent in the past. We're halfway through. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.